Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Mark London. You know him as the CEO of Mad Cave Studios. So join us as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. London, and thank you for joining Traversing the Stars.
No, thank you, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
It's definitely my pleasure, sir. So one question I like to ask all my guests when they come on, especially about comic books, is do you remember when you first fell in love with comic books and which ones were the first ones that you purchased?
Yeah, probably, I don't know. I think that I was probably 12, and I remember that I saw this cover for Silver Surfer, and we had him shouting like death to the emperor, and I was just like, oh my god, what is this? And then I started devouring every single page, and then I got sucked in. And I remember that a few months later, or probably like a year later, the Infinity Saga was happening with all the Thanos stuff with Infinity Gauntlet. And that basically just sealed the deal. So then I started just to like, okay, picking up Spider-Man comic books, and then I went, okay, all the way back, and it was like, okay, let's read everything from Neil Gaiman, everything from Garrett Morrison, everything from Alan Moore, and I guess the rest is history.
So do you remember when you decided that comic books were something you could actually do for a living?
That's a great question. I actually wanted to be a screenwriter first. I always loved movies, animation, video games. But for some reason, when I started like understanding a little bit more about sequential art and everything that was involved, and you can really, really tell a story panel by panel, I think that that was it for me. I think that that was when I said, like, this is the way to tell stories. And I also remember an interview with Alan Moore back in the day, and when he was actually saying that he preferred the format because a comic book would actually allow you to put certain pieces of the story, so then the reader would be able to go back and actually say, like, oh my god, look, we missed this, but it was just here, like, in real time. So when you're watching a movie, you're not able to just, like, let's just say that you go to the movies in a theater and you're like, oh, hey, what happened in the first scene? Was that there? Was like, so the experience is completely like different. Sure. I mean, you can watch the movie at home, I mean, with Netflix or whatever, and just like pause it and then go back. But back in the day, we didn't have that. So that was basically what he was saying, like the way that you would basically just tell a story. And that made so much sense to me. And I guess that's when I wanted to try to start and developing comic books or writing for the comic book format.
So as you said, you originally wanted to be a screenwriter.
Yes.
How are the skills of a screenwriter and a comic book writer similar?
Well, you need to understand story. First and foremost, you need to know the basics of your plot. You need to know, I mean, what's going to be your character's journey, hitting all those points. But the format is just different, basically. The thing is that when you're writing for movies, you basically just take into account different rules that you're supposed to be following, that you're not supposed to be following when you write a comic book. So the format is different. In a comic book, you're writing panel to panel. And when you're doing screenwriting, you're basically just writing an entire scene, and that could be just a few pages. So you basically just continue what you're doing. So it depends on the format. But if you're really passionate about storytelling, I bet that you can just like pick up a few books and try to see some tutorials, take some classes, see how everything can work. And the most important part is trying to have taste in what you're writing, in the story that you want to tell, believing what you're doing, and then depending on the format or wherever you want to take it, I mean, that's entirely up to you.
So now you're actually the CEO of a comic book company called Mad Cave Comics.
Yes. Guilty.
Well, what did it I mean, what was it? Did it feel like when you first put together this company from scratch yourself, and you were able to look and say, I am now responsible for publishing not only my own stories, but mm-hmm. other creative people as well?
Well, that's a great question, Jeff. And thank you for asking it, because again, at the beginning, MadKid was only supposed to be a project that I wanted to do for myself. I wanted to transition into writing, again, scripts or screenplays or something that it was just for me. And when I fell in love with comic book writing, I was like, okay, I can probably just do this and set up like a fan page and maybe just get an artist and put some stuff up there just for fun. And almost 5 years ago, more actually 6 years ago, I was looking for a guy to help me out with putting together a website. And when I started showing him like all the different things that I wanted to do, he was like, hey, listen, I think that you might have something here. I think that this is just more than just a fan page or some stories here and there. So I started getting in contact with people from the industry, artists, other writers, colorists, letters, graphic designers. And this team started to build up, where then, before you knew it, we actually had like a company and we started publishing like, okay, my books at first, but that was not really the plan for the company. I really didn't want this to be like, okay, the Mark London Show. I didn't want to have just like a company so I could publish my own stuff. I really just wanted to have other people bringing in their talent, their craft to the table, and that we can publish very high quality comic books that people will enjoy and they would be memorable, and that that people will basically get bang for their bucks.
Now, obviously, as everyone knows who is a fan of comic books, is that comic books is a very tough racket. But MadKid has been able to hang in there very well. Mm-hmm. What are you doing to make sure, and what considerations are you thinking about to ensure its survival?
Well, the first thing that you have to know is like, look at your surroundings. And what I mean by that is like, there's like, now we have such a diverse pool of people reading comic books. You have to keep track of that. You have to pay attention of who are the people that are reading comic books. But again, also be true to why you got into comic books in the first place. So what it's important? Why are you doing what you're doing? So at the end of the day, for me, again, is just memorable characters, story, talent, great looking books. And I'm a faith believer that if you keep that up, I mean, people will understand what you're doing. They will congratulate what you're doing in terms of becoming a fan of your company or for your product. And getting more people on board that actually understand that vision or see the world like you do, it's actually what has made us, I guess, be successful in everything that we're doing. And like I always like to say, I mean, we're getting started because the plans that we have set in motion for the next 2-3 years are very ambitious, are very aggressive. But I think that who's going to benefit at the end of the day are the fans.
So when you're thinking about the comic books that you're going to publish, mm-hmm. what would you say constitutes a MadKid comic book?
That's also a great question, Jeff. Thank you. No, I think that they're just bombastic widescreen comic books written by a talent, if you want to put it like that. Well, very well written and drawn comic books that actually, when you see them on the racks, you're like, okay, this is something that I want to get behind. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've been trying to get better at that promise, better at that mission, at that notion. And that is something that we are paying attention as, again, for the next 2 or 3 years.
So I think one of the coolest thing that MadKid comic books does, and I think a lot of people in the industry, especially in the indie industry, really loves about your company, is that every year you host a talent search.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of things are you looking for as for your finalists and in the talent search?
Well, as you said, I mean, getting into comics and doing this job is not as romantic as it seems. I mean, it's hard work, it's difficult.
Yes.
It's really hard work. So I think that I was blessed enough to be able to kind of like do what I love. And at the beginning, trust me, Jeff, it wasn't easy. It still is not easy. And I don't expect it to be easy. That's really what makes it fun. But with the talent search, we wanted to kind of give back to the community. We wanted to give back. We know how hard it is to actually go out there, because let's face it, when you have a script, nobody wants to read your script. Unless you have an artist, I mean, attached to the project, nobody's going to read your freaking thing. I mean, it's just going to be like, come on, dude. And you have this manuscript, 120 pages, and everybody's going to look at you like, really? But when you have an artist attached to it, they'll be like, okay, this is a different story. I might be able to check out a few pages and then probably go from there. And when there are certain publishers or certain editors out there that have been doing this for a long time, they have a trained eye to know, like, okay, I know where this is going. Okay, you have talent. That's what you see in social media, that a lot of people, they just advertise their portfolio day, or when you're in conventions, a lot of people, hey, can I show you my portfolio? So it's kind of like everybody tries to advertise this stuff. So it's very, very hard to break into the medium. And with this talent search that we do every single year, and knock on wood, hopefully we're going to continue doing it every single year moving forward, is basically giving back to the people that are out there that don't have the opportunity to be able to pay for an artist, that they can have their work out there for other people to actually see how good and talented they are. And go ahead.
No, I was going to say, as someone who does indie writing myself and publishing, I so totally hear you. It is such a hard market, especially like I said, as a writer who's not an artist as well. It is such a hard market for a writer. And the fact that you and your company does look at the indie writer, that as someone who has looked in the industry for people to submit to, there's very few companies that will look at writing only. I think I can only think of maybe two or three that actually will even accept those manuscripts. I think what you guys do is awesome.
Thank you, Jeff. Well, the thing is that a lot of people, they just look at the big names now, people that I admire dearly. Scott Snyder, Donny Cates, Jason Aaron, Brian K. Vaughan. The list is very, very long. But what people need to understand is that those guys were indie writers once. Mm. They started doing and grinding and showing their stuff around. Nobody actually just starts this and they get to the top right away. Some of them might rise faster than others, but that's a different scenario. But all of those guys that we admire and that we are devouring their books, and when they are so talented and we appreciate their craft, they were indie writers once. So with Mad Kid, what we try to do is, like, when we give the opportunity to these guys and they get published, what they do with that moving forward is on them. We are trying to give them something that they can show other people, that they can show other publishers, and keep on working at this. But you really need to want it. Because if you get to write your first comic book, and if it flops or if it's successful, there's no guarantee that your second comic book is going to be great or your third comic book is going to be amazing. I mean, it's a day to day. As my wife always told me when we started this, it was like, dude, this is not a sprint. This is a freaking marathon. So it's like, keep going, keep working hard. And at the end of the day, the people that are left standing are those who really, really wanted it the most.
Well, as someone who will speak at the moment for the indie community, I think we all bow to you and what you're doing for us, as you said, with the search, with your company. And I think you can't overestimate just how big of a deal that is, that you do have that talent search for indie people. I think that's a huge deal.
Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
And kind of interesting, you're also talking about the big writers. I think it's very cool to see that Mad Cave is also moving or has grown to the point where you have some huge writers working on a project of yours called Grim Tales from the Cave.
Correct.
Which is an anthology book, and you have talents on it such as Stephanie Phillips and Cullen Bunn, who anyone who listens to or reads comic books, listen to the podcast of comic books, knows that those are two very significant names in the industry. But I mean, Cullen Bunn has done so much stuff.
Yeah, he's a big deal.
So how did it feel adding those names to the project, and how did that come about?
Well, not only that, because we have Cullen Bunn, but we also have Stephanie Phillips, as you mentioned, but we also have Christopher Sabella, which is another big name that has done great in the books for Image and for other publishers. But we also have Nadia Shamas, which is an amazing artist. We have Rowan, who is a tremendous colorist. Andrea Muti, which actually worked with Cullen on his story, Soldiers of Fortune for Grim Tales from the Cave, which actually now is making a killing with Bunny Mask for Aftershock. So you have some big names here. So the idea was, again, we're all in the same playing field, Jeff. It's like, as long as you want it, as long as you really, really want to write comics, I mean, we're all the same. The passion, the level, everything that you're going to pour on your freaking keyboard is on display here. So we wanted to get those very established writers or people that have been doing this for a very long time and they have become very popular, and also throw them in a mix with the Talent Search winners. So we can actually have a product. And when you take a look at Grim Tales from the Cave, I think I'm very, very proud of how the work came together, because I think that we have a very nice balance of the stories, of the way that everybody approached the Grim Tales. So it's our way to give back to the community.
So can you give our listeners your pitch for Grim Tales from the Cave?
That is fucking awesome. You don't need another.
Perfect two-word description.
Pardon my French. No, that is the only Halloween book that you would need this season, really. I mean, it's close to 11 stories packed with supernatural elements, with horror elements. Every single one has a great take on the supernatural. So if that's really your cup of tea, I mean, you're going to be in for a nice surprise.
Well, I was very lucky that Melissa from Don't Hide PR, the publicist, mm-hmm. Sent yes. me a free copy to read. And I thought it was, as you said, fucking awesome. There are, you know, great tales. So in your opinion, what is the key then to writing a great horror script?
Well, for me, it has to be a little bit more on the psychological side of things. For me, it has to really, really set the reader and put him in a very uncomfortable level. Because with the jump scares, when you're watching a movie, probably 90% of what does the work are the sounds that you get. It's really the music. It's really the tempos that are used. But with comic books, that's very different. That's very, very difficult. So what you need to try to do is try to get into the reader's head and try to make him feel uncomfortable, uneasy about the whole experience. What is going on? Where are we going with this story? What's going to happen to the characters? What are the stakes? What's going to be the moral of the story? So again, that's for me how I see an amazing horror comic book.
So in your opinion, every good horror story does have a moral to it, a message?
Sure. Go ahead, Jeff. No, you're right. I mean, so some of them, they do need, well, a horror, but they do need a moral of a story. But also, I mean, a lot of these freaking horror tales, I mean, they do have a happy ending. I mean, at the end, when you even, I don't know, take a look at Alien. I mean, okay, you kill the fucking monster. Okay, you survive. Okay, happy ending. Sure, the rest of your crew died. But I mean, at least at the end, you're the last survivor. So
right.
Horror stories, I mean, they can have a happy ending. For me, it's just more about, like, again, in my opinion, I mean, it's more about, yes, the moral of the story and what the reader is going to feel like. Man, shit. I mean, a story that really, really stays with you right after you're done with it.
Mm. So the story that you contributed is called Pay the Piper. What inspired its creation?
I've always been in love when we decided that we were going to do like our own little take, or that we were going to give everybody a chance at the Grimm tales, at the Grimm Brothers tales, which are very, I mean, they have so many, Jeff, and they're like so twisted. I mean, a lot of the Disney stories that we all grew up with, they probably, their inception probably came from the Grimm tales, from the Brother Grimm, and they're brutal. I mean, Cinderella, you have, I mean, when they're trying the glass slipper, I mean, they even cutting their toes to try to fit into the slipper. Yeah, it's messed up. I'm sorry, I mean, that we're really fans of Cinderella, but yes, I mean, the original source material is very, very dark. So we had this huge list, and we send it to all the writers, to the established writers that we wanted for the anthology, and to the talent search winners. And Chris Fernandez, which is a Mad Kids Studios editor, and he's always with me and always edits all my books. He told me, hey, listen, Mark, you need to be on this. I was like, dude, I'm busy. I'm working on other things. And we're like, no, you need to be in this book. So we're like, okay, let's do it. So when he just gave me the list, I had to pick last. So it was like, okay, what is it? And when I just saw the Piper, I was like, man, I really want to do something here. I really want to do something here. And I know that my story, for example, is not really, really that dark and that horror. It doesn't have that horror vibe. I really wanted just to tell like a very, I don't know. I wanted to just apply my own take to the Piper. So.
What I find really interesting is that you're saying like you would, everyone took a pick and you were like hoping that you do the Piper. I'm thinking to myself, you're the CEO. You could do any story you wish. Or you could be like, I'm doing this one. God damn it. It's my company.
But thank you, Jeff, because no, you know what, that when I'm in the writer's seat, when I'm with those guys, I mean, I'm in the room and I basically just have to take it like everybody else. You mm. have no idea the meetings that I have with editors behind the scenes, when they just tell me like, hey, listen, this doesn't work. You have to do this whole thing over again. I'm like, oh, excuse me. No, I mean, I'm like, okay, fine. I mean, I'll do it again. As much as these things, which is like constructive criticism, but hey,
yeah.
If I can just give one word of advice to upcoming writers, it's always try to get an editor on board. Try to listen to them. Don't be cocky. They know what they're doing and they're gonna make you a better writer. I do the same thing. I'm always like the humble guy, like on the corner of the room being like, okay, if this doesn't work, okay, I'll write it again. What about this? Let's try to do that stuff. So believe me, I mean, with that, I was like trying to have my own take, but I wanted everybody to pick first. So,
you know, I can't imagine the amount of balls it takes as an editor to tell the boss of your company to rework their story. Now this got to be redone. It's like, well, dude, you're fired. Get the hell out of here.
Oh no, they just don't fucking respect me. Well, that's another story.
That's awesome.
Oh my god. So, no, we know. You know. All joking aside, no, I mean, they get it. I mean, they're like, you always have to surround yourself, Jeff. I mean, my father used to say like, hey, listen, if you want to be successful, I mean, you need to try to surround yourself with people that are better, more talented, and smarter than you. Because if you're the smartest guy in the room and you think that you know everything, then really that's not going to get you anywhere. So I really want all the people at Mad Cave are amazing. I mean, we have a wonderful team. I mean, this company would not be anywhere if it wasn't for the team. And I pay attention to every single one of them when they have something to say. And again, they made me better. And that's how it is.
When you looked around yourself and you saw how much talent is working on this anthology, did you find that everyone was kind of pushing themselves a little extra harder to keep up with everybody else? Because you, like I said, you got a lot of very experienced talent. And obviously, they're going to do great work. So everyone kind of look around and go, oh, shit, I got up my game now to keep up with these guys.
Well, I think that secretly everybody's competing with everybody and everybody wants to have the best story there. But the thing is that when you work with established talent, I mean, and again, experience would always trump when you're starting out. I mean, that's the reality. So, and look, when we try to publish guys that won the talent search, again, we're there for them. We're there to guide them. We're there to actually support them, to make them shine at the end when everything is said and done. So, and sure, I mean, there's going back and forward with when you're starting out or when you don't have enough experience as Colin or Sabella or even freaking Stephanie Phillips. But again, it's all part of the process. And if you can also see, I mean, who's editing all those stories? I mean, we have like three editors on that book. So everybody kind of takes their own little list.
And I also would have to say, not only is your story, Pay the Piper, really well written, but it's also a beautiful looking story. And the artist, Luisa, if I say the name right,
Luisa Russo, yes.
So
she's a terrific.
How did she get involved and what did she bring to the project that was perfect for the story?
Well, I wrote the script. Unfortunately, I did not tailor the script to Luisa's, let's just say, art style, but I wrote the script and it was actually Chris Sanchez and Chris Fernandez at the time that they were looking for somebody that I could actually work on the series. So they gave me like a couple of options and they were like, okay, what do you think? And I think that Luisa Russo, when I just saw some of her pages on her past work, I just fell in love with what she was doing. And I was like, I mean, this is the person that can deliver the story.
And like I said, one thing I love about that story is that there's definitely a moral lesson within the story and definitely a lot of social underpinnings. Did you conceptualize first the message of the story or the plot of the story?
Both. If for me, I mean, they always like, it's hard to explain, but for me, like both things, they just always tie organically. Like all my stories, I mean, I always need to have a message where there is, there's a fantastic book, which I really, really like. And I recommend it to every single writer or aspiring artist, by Brian McDonald, which is called Invisible Ink. And it's basically everything that you're writing, but what's the invisible ink? So what's really underneath? What's the message? So I think that when we write as writers, it's like, what are you trying to say? What is it that you want people to actually take away from this? Because if not, it's just words on a page. And sure, it might be just Sergeant Sixpack with an Uzi shooting everybody for 20 straight pages, but what's left? So it might be cool. It might be, the action might be fantastic, but at the end of the day, what stays with you? So for me, always like it goes hand in hand, Jeff.
So one of the great characters in the story is the character of Janet, who's a very strong female character. Mm-hmm. What influenced her creation? Were there other stories or individuals that you drew upon to create her story?
No, I think that she's the type of person. She's like every human being that I've actually faced with everybody has a choice. and we live our lives, and there's always a choice from the day that from the moment that we wake up to the moment that we go to bed. So Janet is basically a reflection on what we humans experience every single day, and how temptation even comes to your door, and you might think that you're doing the right thing, although you know that you're doing the wrong thing. Mm. That makes sense. And at the end of the day, well, for those that haven't read the story, but I mean, we're talking about it. That's where the Piper knew this. The Piper knew this, and that's why he basically just gives it another shot, because her heart was actually pure. See, she was just a casualty of the situation, of everything that her landlord was putting her through.
And like I said, and one thing I like about the story a lot is that obviously one of the main commentaries is a question of villains. Who's the true villain of the story? You have obviously you have the rats. You have the I guess I guess he wouldn't be a slumlord, but the one who owns the tenement.
Yes, Bruce.
And Bruce, and then you have the Piper. And I think that's a very interesting question of actual villainy. And I like that idea that you're going with a very real villain and a very, you have the fanciful villain Piper, but you also have a very real villain as well.
No, it's like, unfortunately, Bruce, I mean, represents how far, I mean, sometimes, I mean, the worst traits that a human being can display, which is just a greedy fucker that actually is just going to try to take advantage of the weaklings or somebody else just to gain more money or power and keep on pressing. So it's like, I wanted to try to put that on display, and that's why he actually pays the ultimate price. Pay the Piper, pays the ultimate, no pun intended, but yes. So then he pays the ultimate price. I mean, at the end of the story.
So in your opinion, is the Piper a villain or more of a teacher of lessons?
I think that he's a teacher of lessons. He's a teacher of lessons. Sure. Judge, jury, and executioner, of course. And although what he decides might not be correct or might be questionable, especially when he tries to help these kids out, and he takes them out of their misery. I'm kind of like talking here, being a little bit cryptic for those who haven't read the story, but when he basically just tries to, again, be its own judge. But again, he sees your heart at the end of the day.
And I think, like I said, Piper was such a well-written character. When you wrote the character, was there any point you thought to yourself, or are you thinking to yourself, there's other stories where the Piper should appear?
I don't know if the character per se, but I think that his essence, I think that I carry his essence in a lot of the characters that I write in other stories. Mm. Again, just trying to do the right thing, trying to bring justice, shining some light where there's darkness. Mm. I guess that's the way that I see it, Jeff.
Well, like I said, I think your Grim Tales from the Cave was a fantastic anthology. I really enjoyed it. Where can our listeners find it?
Well, you can find it anywhere comic books are sold. You can find it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or you can go directly to madcavestudios.com or madcave.com, and you can buy your copy there. It's a fantastic read. Guarantee you guys.
So what can listeners look forward to next from you and from Mad Cave?
Okay, from Mad Cave, I mean, we have a very packed 2022. We have some very interesting titles that are going to be released next year. We have something called Speed Republic. We have Tiger Stung. We have Potions Inc. I might be returning. I'm doing my best and try to keep to come back with Knights of the Golden Sun Volume 3, which is it's one of my books. But yeah, and another talent search contest.
Well, that sounds awesome, and I really look forward when you do have your next volume come out of Knights of the Golden Sun. You come right back on.
Excellent. Absolutely, Jeff. It will be my honor.
Well, Mr. Lund, it was a great pleasure to talk with you. I really, like I said, I have a lot of respect for what you've done with Mad Cave. I think you've been great for the indie industry. And as an indie writer, thank you.
No, thank you, Jeff. I really, really appreciate you having me. And again, I hope to do this again sometime.
It's definitely my pleasure. Have a fantastic night.
You too, sir. Thank you, Jeff.
No problem.